Grand Touring Motorsports started as a social group of car enthusiasts, but we've expanded into all sorts of motorsports disciplines, and we want to share our stories with you. Years of racing, wrenching, and motorsports experience brings together a top-notch collection of knowledge and information through our podcast, Break Fix.
The following episode is intended for mature audiences. Please note that listener discretion is advised.
She was a beautiful fugitive, fleeing from corruption and from power. He was a professional athlete past his prime, hired to find her, and he grew to love her. Love turned to obsession, obsession turned to murder, and now the price of freedom might be nothing less than their lives.
She stole 50 grand from me. I want her back, and I want you to find her for me.
You got problems now, Terry. You want trouble too?
Not many people could handle something like this, Jesse. But you come from a powerful family.
So what is it you don't like exactly? Football players, tacos, or beer?
I like tacos and I like beer.
So many people must have loved you.
Just let me take her back with me, Terry.
You mean he can hurt me?
Don't think if he doesn't even things up with me, I'm not going to stomp on his pretty face.
You were in on it, Jess.
That's not
you
true.
Helped set me up.
Get off him!
I just found out tonight Jake jumps for you.
You told him everything, didn't you? Didn't you?
You've become everything I'm about. Don't you understand that?
Jake, I love him!
You don't think I need to be cared for, too? You want to gamble with me, Terry?
This is going to be a really entertaining review of Against All Odds, starring Jeff Bridges, Rachel Ward, and James Woods, featuring our friends Steve and Izzy from
Everything I Learned from Movies. Hey, everybody.
Hey, I'm sorry. You just described the plot to The Big Lebowski, so we may have watched the wrong movie.
An unemployed Jeff Bridges is hired by a rich white to find a family member. Hijinks ensue. Those are some nice shades you got on there, Eric.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. It's all 80s all the time.
Got the collar freshly popped.
I am so happy to be back with you guys. And we have Mountain Man Dan with us, and we have Tanya from the drive through. And we're going to be talking about Against All Odds, a movie that you guys hadn't seen.
No.
And I hadn't seen. I don't think anybody had seen it. We got sucked into this because of a car chase. So what better way to talk about an 80s movie than through a car chase scene?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where do we start?
I mean, we got to start with the people that brought us this movie, right?
Who are they, Steve?
Well, it was directed by Tyler Hackford.
Who?
You might know him from other movies he's directed, like Bukowski. No, not that one. An Officer and a Gentleman.
Oh.
All right.
This. White Knights. And then, yeah, music videos for this Phil Collins guy we might be talking about later. Lionel Richie, a movie called Everybody's All-American, Bound by Honor. All right, then we start getting into stuff like Dolores Claiborne.
Who?
Yeah. How about The Devil's Advocate, babe? You ever seen that movie?
Yeah.
Where are you?
Guys, you want to see Keanu with a Floridian accent, quote unquote? That's the movie.
Baby.
Oh, baby.
I love the dumpster fire movie so much.
You know what I love about this? This is such a gem of a movie, and it comes on the heels of Jeff Bridges doing Tron. If you look at the IMDb for this, there's not much in between.
And immediately after this is Starman, where he basically plays deadpan.
Exactly. So he's really showing his versatility as an actor in like a 3-year span.
You're able to see the dude in all of his dudedom across these movies. Because let's face it, Jeff Bridges is just the dude.
And we'll get to that.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Talk about an all-star cast in this movie, too.
Yeah, you mentioned Academy Award winner Jeff Bridges. Academy Award, I think nominee at least, James Woods.
Oh.
As Jake Wise or Weeze, or I don't know how you're supposed to say his name. It's said a couple different ways in this movie. Weiss.
I have said it many times on our podcast. James Woods is a dumpster fire of a human being. He is not a good man, But that translates so beautifully on film. He is a joy to watch.
Quintessential villain. I mean, you just look at him and go, that's a bad guy, period.
Yeah.
Even in John Carpenter's Vampires.
Oh, dude. Well, so John Carpenter's Vampires, John Carpenter wanted to make a vampire hunter who was as cruel and vicious as the things he killed. And I think it worked. If you want to see some peak James Woods, you have to watch The Specialist. He is at the peak of his game.
And then we've got Rachel Ward.
Who?
Yeah.
Exactly. She's pretty.
But we also have guys like Alex Karras, who played Hank Sully, right? Isn't he the dad from Webster?
I think so. I know he's in stuff in the 80s that I never watched, but that sounds about right. I've never seen Webster, so.
You've got Saul Rubinek, who Tanya knows from Frasier as the husband of Daphne.
No, they didn't get married. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
Donnie, she left him at the altar.
That's right.
For others, you may know Saul Rubinek as, I forget the name of the producer's name in True Romance, but he's that guy, like coked out, definitely not Joel Silver.
You've got Swoozy Kurtz and one of my personal favorites, Dorian Harewood. Does anybody know where he's from?
Yes, we just saw him in a movie.
Oh, yeah. I don't.
My God, no, I just had a brain fart. Where is he from?
Was it a Cameron Mitchell movie? Well, he was in Viper.
As Tanya said, I know him best from the Viper TV series. He played the technician in the wheelchair who built the morphing multi-vehicle Viper that was basically a replacement for Knight Rider.
That's what you bring up? Not like, first thing that comes up on his IMDb is Full Metal Jacket, Space Jam, Sudden Death. He's the guy. Sudden Death, the Jean-Claude Van Damme, dare I say, classic.
Recently. Oh, it's a classic. Anything with Jean-Claude Van Damme is instantly a classic.
And Eric, I wanted to bring this up. One of my favorite actors is in this movie, too. An actor named Ted White.
Who's he, Steve?
You might know him as security guard with dog in this movie. He's a stuntman in over 80 things, starting with he was gunslinger in Cat Ballou, assassin in Man from U.N.C.L.E., trooper in Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, who I'm surprised we haven't talked about on this show yet. He was Hugo Malt in an episode of Kolchak. He was Nazi and Fence in two separate episodes of The Rockford Files. Oh, he was Frankie and Demonoid. It's about a devil hand. Check it out. Goon number one in Going Ape, the timeless Danny DeVito, Tony Danza movie everyone loves.
Have we done that for April yet?
No, we have not. Coming soon. Guard number three in Tron. This, Grogan in Romancing the Stone. Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th, the final chapter. I think that's the fourth one of 12 or so they've made. He was the deer hunter in Starman. Another Jeff Bridges one. A couple episodes of The Fall Guy, Henchman in Magnum P.I., Attendant in X-Files, and Trooper in Double Take. Yes, the Orlando Jones, Eddie Griffin movie everybody has on Blu-ray.
And normally we would save all of this cast and credit information for the bottom of And Everything I Learned from Movies and Break Fix crossover episode. But in this case, we need to set the stage. We need to get people to understand the star-studded cast, the amount of money that was thrown at this movie, and how much potential it has.
That's right. We just need an excuse for why the sky is so dark, because all of the stars are in this movie.
Before we dive into it, what are you guys drinking tonight?
Oh, my.
Babe, you want to take this one?
Well, we have from Sierra Nevada Brewing, traditional pale ale, draft style, 5% alcohol by volume. Steve's going to pop his top.
Oh, my top.
And, oh, my top.
Hey,
yeah, guys, Sierra Nevada, we love it. And if you've never been to the brewery, at least the one in Chico is Willy Wonka and the Beer Factory. It's one of the most fun beer tours you will ever do. How about you guys? What are y'all drinking?
I haven't popped my top yet, but you've noticed that I've...
The color's popped. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing my Jones polarized big aviator sunglasses. I'm wearing my Ferrari polo shirt. I've got my 911 Cabriolet behind me here.
Never forget.
I'm trying to immerse myself in the world of Against All Odds. And just like this movie, I went on a wild goose chase looking for Tab, and I settled instead on San Pellegrino.
Ooh.
This movie screams white people doing white people things, set in LA, in the hills of Malibu and Santa Monica, and it just goes from there.
There's not enough yacht rock. I agree.
Embrace the yacht rock.
The one thing you're saying, Eric, when it came to the cast, I'd be curious to know the budget, because like the movie's from 1984. Actors weren't paid near as much then as they are now, I don't imagine. So couldn't have been that able to cost for this movie.
I'm a big Jeff Bridges fan. Like, people know Tron is like one of my top five movies of all time.
But it doesn't even have cars.
Well, it's got motorcycles, though.
Yeah, it's got the light cycles.
They're light cycles, yeah.
It's a close tie between 89 Batman with Michael Keaton and Tron. I mean, they're like fighting for first, right?
I can see that.
Jeff Bridges in this movie is 35 years old. He's been acting literally since he was in diapers in 1949. And so he's probably the most overpaid person on this movie, but he didn't really gain his popularity until the 80s. And obviously he became a superstar with The Big Lebowski, and he's kind of stamped himself in eternity that way.
Wait, was that the one that made him a superstar?
I think culturally a superstar. Like, he's a pop icon, right? Yeah. He's that pop culture reference after The Big Lebowski. Like, everybody knows him for that, despite everything he did up until that point. He had an entire career when Rachel Ward was still trying to get off the blocks with hers, right? And so the dynamic of people in this movie is really interesting. And there is a hidden gem here, which we'll talk about in the what did we learn part of this episode that I discovered along the way. But I think we need to really peel back the onion here and talk about what could have been a really, really good movie and what we ended up with.
Nice. Well, I guess before that, Mountain Man Dan, not to be confused with Mountain Mike, which I've been calling you the past couple times. what do you think the budget for this movie was?
I can't imagine it was too much.
Any guesses out there?
$125,000. Well, in 1980s dollars, right? I'm going to guess this is like a multi-million dollar movie.
More than 2 million, I'll give you that. No, it's 13 million. Even like with inflation stuff, kind of a mid-range, probably be like a Netflix movie nowadays, you know?
Well, let's face it, that Porsche and that Ferrari were new at that time, and they were not cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there went most of the budget.
There you go. And that was a new 308. That wasn't some borrowed leftover from Magnum PI either. That was a 308 QV that came out in 84, 85 time range. That's like the end of the line for that car. So they spent a pretty penny. I think those things were going in 1980s dollars in the high 30s, low $40,000 for one of those. And then all the stunts that they probably needed 13 of them to get through the chase scene, which again, we'll talk about as we go along. So I can see it racking up a pretty penny.
Still for 1984, that's a lot of money.
It's a quality film. And Steve and Izzy are going to take us through it.
Oh, are we? Oh, okay.
Oh, are we? Oop, it's our episode. All right, get ready for us to do a tap takeover.
All right, guys. Well, we start off in Cozumel. Cozumel, Mexico, baby. We get a nice little POV shot of basically Jeff Bridges doing his best T-1000. Like, have you seen this woman? Have you seen this woman? ¿Dónde está esa woman?
The only Spanish he had to learn, which we heard 50 times. ¿Has visto esta mujer? ¿Has visto esta mujer? My wife was making fun. Like, is that all he knows how to say in Spanish?
Yes, that is all he knows how to say.
He practiced that for a week. Nailed it.
Hashtag nailed it.
For the car people, did anybody figure out what he was driving in that opening scene before they showed it later?
Well, I thought it was a Porsche. Like, I mean, you can kind of tell.
No. This was the... Oh, the one in Mexico? It was a thing.
Yes!
Oh,
yes!
Yeah, the Volkswagen thing. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that set the tone for me automatically is when he's sitting there at the table in a diner or whatever, and he's like asleep, and they have to come up and like wake him up. And he's like, oh, and he kind of wakes up. I'm like, that should have been the foresight for me right there to just stop watching.
Yeah, he basically fell asleep waiting for his meal to be brought. And I'm like, oh, it's to show he's been exhausted by saying the same line over and over again all day. I'm like, Mr. Bridges, we're ready to shoot. Oh, yes. Thank you for the lobster and whatever is here on the plate. Forget that, because we're going to cut immediately to football practice. Like, immediately. I'm like, oh, did I hit skip? Nope, we're just there.
Took a sudden turn that I was not expecting. Here we are, training day on a no-name football team, which I think is supposed to be the Raiders.
Yeah, the LA Outlaws, but it's the 80s and got to make up the teams. Otherwise, you got to pay the NFL $25 and, you know, you don't want to do that. Not on this tight budget. And yeah, he's, you know, a 35-year-old wide receiver. We know there's, what, dozens of them in the NFL now? Is Larry Fitzgerald still receiving? I don't know. But yeah, the new coach, I guess, that's come in, he's like, I don't like you. You and your Steve Largent with a beard attitude. You say you got a good shoulder. Let's find out by having you just ram it into this thing. That's not how you use that sled, by the way. Like, I don't know if you guys played football in high school. You don't just randomly jam body parts into it like you're trying to break it. You're trying to pop your shoulder back in the place and it's Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Like, unreal.
Well, especially he's also like, I'm going to do it just out of spite or whatever. Like, you're going to cripple yourself out of spite for the coach. And this is why NFL players make sure they get their guaranteed money now.
That hurt just watching it. I don't know who the stunt guy was or if Jeff was doing that, but every time he lunged into that thing, oh man, my shoulder hurt just thinking about it.
When I played football in the 90s, the padding wasn't that great on it then. You could feel that metal bar hitting on your shoulder. Oh, so yeah. Back in the 80s, I'm sure the padding was even worse.
It's like filled with ball bearings or something. No, why are there shorts in here?
Now, based on that opening scene with him and Cozumel and his limited Spanish, I was expecting him to turn around to the coach and be like, yo soy fiesta.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, have you seen this woman? What? No. Wait, I think that's the owner's daughter. We'll find out later. Anyway, so he gets like cut by the coach right there. Like, oh, cool. You broke your shoulder again. Good luck.
You're out.
Like, oh, I'm going to call my agent, Steve Kirsch, or whatever. Saul Rubinek.
Discount Elliot Gould.
Yeah. Can you be a discount Elliot Gould when you're already starting off with Elliot Gould, though?
I'm sorry, babe. You mean the star of...
The Devil and Max Devlin?
Max Devlin. And what was the one where James Bond played a Nazi?
Oh, Escape from Athena or something like that?
Yeah. Where our romantic lead was Elliot Gould.
Yeah, the 70s had a lot of coke, too. Never forget.
And Roger Moore was a Nazi.
Get that dropped. Yeah, he drives off in his Porsche. What was 911 2.0?
It was an 84 911 SC Cabriolet. And in that parking lot shot, when you see it the first time, I was like, ooh, this is cool. It was kind of funny to see the other Porsches in the parking lot. I'm sure Dan and Tanya probably picked up on it. To the left of the car was a 924 and to the right was a 928. And I was like, oh, this is a Porsche get together here. It's like a club meeting. I always love these old movies because there are cars placed here and there. And I play that game of like, what's that quarter panel from? And if I can figure it out from just even a taillight or something, then it makes it kind of fun and makes, you know, I've spotted all sorts of weird cars in old movies like that. So that's the end of my nerd out on that stuff. Lots of Porsches in this movie. So there goes the budget again.
I got the same thing with like the nude body doubles in 80s movies. And I'm like, wait a minute. I know those nipples. So he's trying to get a hold of his agent, and the agent's like, whatever, pass him on to Hal Shoemaker, who we'll never see in this movie, unfortunately. I assume he's going to be played by, like, I don't know, John Goodman or something. But yeah, basically he shows up, meets the secretary, Edie, and, you know, eventually talks to his lawyer or agent or whatever he's supposed to be. And he's like, look, you know, I can't represent players anymore because I represent ownership.
Yeah. And Jeff's like, oh, you're not allowed to do that. Discount Elliot Gould's like, well, I mean, I do what I want. You can try fighting it, but like, good luck with that. Jeff is escorted out by the secretary who drops way too much information about a private meeting.
Edie Exposition, I believe, was her full name. And then she's also like, hey, so if you're ever looking to hang out or whatever, I'm at the Ginger Man Bar or whatever down the street. I'm there just about every night. And I'm like, well, that's definitely not going to come back later in the movie.
Nope. And when it does, it's like 6 months later.
Yeah, totally. I'm like, oh, Edie can't find a man in 6 months. Come on. Seems so sweet.
It reeked of desperation, which was a cologne by, I think, Pierre Cardin or Armani back in the 80s, too. But that whole scene was just pretty terrible. But I stopped at that moment as we reach back into our catalog. You know how you guys reach back into other movies? There's an episode we did with Ginger Man Raceway, and they tell the story about the Ginger Man Bar. And so I had to stop for a second because I was really confused. We're in California. We're talking about meeting at the Ginger Man Bar. And I'm like, wait, let me cross references. And there's only two in the United States official Ginger Man bars, Chicago and New York. And the one we are referencing to is in Chicago because the guy that owned that actually created the racetrack. So I thought for a second, I was like, wow, that's a fun little tie, a little piece of trivia, a little nugget there for the gearheads. No. It's a fictitious Ginger Man in Los Angeles.
Did they not even have one back in the 80s? Or I don't know if like there were like 12 back in the 80s, but now there's only two. I don't know. Like Hard Rocks.
Yes, this movie spiraled lots of research. I'm not going to kid you. So I had to stop at this moment, go look things up. The Ginger Man itself is actually a book, which is where these bars get their inspiration from. There's, you know, not to get into all that.
I would be interested to find out if the writers of the movie purposely named the Ginger Man as like a sort of shout out to either of those bars.
Or the book itself. Again, there's these little nuggets where I got to go back and do some research, you know, do some investigating. But there wasn't one in LA, confirmed original New York and Chicago.
Okay. East Coast thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if we consider Chicago East Coast.
Yeah, it's east from here, so I'll allow it.
So here's the thing. Like, so when I lived in Detroit, everybody was like, oh, that's Midwest. And I was like, but you guys all consider Chicago East Coast, and that is 6 hours west of here.
That's just because of bougie.
How come she's not getting a hard time saying Illinois is East Coast?
Oh, people will say Chicago's East Coast, and it's like, no, I'm sorry. Detroit in Michigan is at least on East Coast time.
What Tanya is referring to is the beaches of Pennsylvania.
At least Pennsylvania is closer to the actual coastline. And I didn't mean that it's on the coastline, much like she's doing. She's insinuating it's part of the eastern side of the U.S.
Hey, it's east of the Mississippi. That's East Coast.
It's not a flyover state.
It's a fly-through state, trust me. You don't want to have to change in Midway or O'Hare.
Oh, God, Midway.
So now we cut away after smelling all that desperation.
And then we get a new scent. This one is Perspiration by Jeff Bridges as he's running laps. And look, Jeff Bridges is a handsome man, especially with the beard. Like, I mean, I'm used to him being clean cut, like in Tron and Starman and stuff like that. With the beard, I'm like, all right, I get it.
All right.
Now the hair slicked back. All right. Never really seen him as like sex icon Jeff Bridges.
What, the Big Lebowski didn't do it for you?
That is just like looking in a mirror. So obviously raw sex.
But I just want to put this out there. Steve did not win the Big Lebowski lookalike contest at our local Big Lebowski Fest. And I did not win the Walter lookalike contest.
To be fair, the guy that won, who's like 9 years in a row because he basically is.
He's John Goodman. Yeah.
John Goodman III or something. John Goodman would lose that.
I was glad the Chihuahua came up like third. They dressed the Chihuahua up in the dude sweater and I won like third place. Sorry, we have a Big Lebowski festival here in town. They've been doing it for like 15 years or something.
Yeah, 10, 12, yeah, maybe 15. I don't know. A while. Yeah, check it out. Ogden, Utah. What happens? Oh, yeah. So his buddy, Dorian Harewood, Tommy, he comes and he's basically like, hey, heard you got cut. That sucks, bro. You know, Jake may have a job for you. Who's Jake? Good old James Woods. James Woods, who they also casually mentioned, he got stabbed like last week. Now's a good time to talk to him and not get involved in a bunch of bullshit. And I'm like, actually, it's quite the opposite. Like, he just got stabbed. He's probably up to his neck in bullshit right now.
Oh, a babyface James Woods.
Oh, yeah. He was young there.
Is he not babyfaced anymore?
Oh, no, honey.
At the ravages of time finally caught up with James Woods.
He looks like Hades now from Hercules.
He does.
Oh, shit.
Well, he sort of looks like if
he looks like Mr. Roper.
Fact.
The first picture when you Google James Woods and he comes up, the left-hand picture, Mr. Frickin' Roper.
Norman Fell.
Yeah, so the next morning we're at the beach. We see James Woods trying to get the attention of his dog, Sam. He's like, come here, buddy. The dog, I swear, was going to run right through the middle of this volleyball match watching.
That's the whole like thing that like, the dog was getting involved, was like biting at the ball.
And then we find out he's involved with the gambling. And I'm like, has he trained that dog to interfere with matches? Because I could totally see that being a plot point later. But yeah, basically they're like, so I heard you might have a job. I just want you to know I'm not working for you. And James was like, yeah, whatever. No, I'm your buddy. Remember, I'm just doing this gambling thing. Hey, just check out my new car. Want a race?
I just bought this. Looks like you got a brand new car, right?
Beautiful black Ferrari, too.
Eric, I think you need to take this next part away where we're talking about the race. Because
I mean, if your tubescence monitor isn't going off too much.
I explained to Eric after watching this first time. I was like, dude, why didn't you just send me like the clip of this portion we're about to watch? Because like all I saw in this movie worth watching.
Yeah, it was all in the trailer, too. That was the thing.
It is. It's a lot of the trailer. And unfortunately, the car chase scene, unlike a lot of movies of the era, is in the first like 15 minutes of the movie. Yeah. And you're like, I got an hour and 45 left to go. Like, what are we going to do now?
I was hoping it was setting us up. Like, my loins were frothed for more of this the whole movie.
I have to say, from a cinematic perspective, it was a good chase scene. It was reminiscent of some of the 70s chase scenes. The stunts were good. There were a couple of cringe moments where James Woods, especially in the Ferrari, kind of pulls out against traffic and you're like, is he gonna make it? It's like, oh, that's close. Like, even the stunt guy was probably having a Code Brown moment doing these stunts because they were really, really close and they were really, really tight. What I also liked, and you guys have heard me complain about before, about using cars in films and chase scenes, is the audio portion of it. And what was great about this was the audio was the 911 and the Ferrari. They were legit
Never forget.
Yeah, so that was nice because it's not like, oh, it's a Mustang, you know, and you're like, ugh, you know, that's gross. Like some of the stuff they did on Miami Vice. But in this case, it all went together. It gelled. The two stunt drivers did a really good job. They came really close. They were like door to door a lot of the time. And it was very well done. I'm not sure what road they were on, but it looked like they were actually on some of those LA close to the canyon roads. Not like a Mulholland, but almost going down into the valley. And it was like, they closed the road to do this. And this was very well.
Or did they? Yeah, that was my thing. I'm like, I hope those are stunt drivers coming the other way. Because otherwise, they might get hit, then shot.
And it was just long enough where some car chase scenes now are too short. Or it's like Fast and the Furious, where it takes 10 minutes to drive an Alfa Romeo on an airplane, you know, kind of deal.
Yeah, a 17-mile runway. Yeah,
exactly. It makes no sense. So in this case, it's like they didn't use the same piece of road over and over again. It kept going. It was a couple minutes long. I love how they were sort of shouting at each other, that antagonism, like, hey, screw you, buddy, but we're going to send it, you know? So it was fun. It was playful. And I was like, cool, this is an interesting, again, a twist, like the fourth one in 15 minutes, because we went from Cozumel to football camp to the lawyer to this car chase. And I'm like, this movie's really sporadic, but this could be a lot of fun. And so, like Izzy, I'm like, I'm all fired up. I'm like, I'm here for all of this.
How have I not heard about this movie?
Some movies, like, they'll have, you know, a character or something that kind of disappears for a portion of it. Well, in this one, you know, James Wood at the beach had the dog. Well, the dog is his passenger to Ferrari the whole time during this race, and you can see the dog various points in the car throughout the chase scene. So I like that fact that they didn't just take the dog out of the picture.
And the dog could give zero shits about what they're doing too. The dog is just like, yeah, this is a Tuesday. I don't even have a seatbelt on. Like, whatever, dude.
By the way, I do just want to say it is totally cruel to have a Samoyed, an Alaskan sled dog, in Los Angeles. Although this is a gorgeous dog.
Really well-trained dog, really good-looking dog. And to Dan's point, the continuity, I like that as well. Like a lot of these movies, it's like, well, that was a jump cut. We'll go back and do that over again.
So all that, this car chase is so good. And then he comes around the corner and there's a parked garbage truck, and he goes from doing probably like 60, 70, whatever they're flying around the corner in, and he's just like, ah! And he stops in like two car lengths.
Yeah, then he like puts it in park, puts on the hazard lights, like he's done, I guess. And it's like, there's no other cars. You could just like go in the other lane right behind James Woods. That was like one of the few times there was nobody else on the road.
I think it was the only time the lanes were clear.
That shows the incredible stopping capability of the Porsche 911. But additionally, signals, they didn't have the budget to wreck it.
It goes from 120 to zero in 2 seconds. But the other way around, it's like 2 minutes because you got to like wind it up, I guess. You know, it will not pass a bus or a garbage truck, a railroad crossing.
It's actually Jeff's 911. It's his daily driver. Like, he's just like, no, we're not doing this.
You just got cut from the team. You can afford another.
Did somebody yell cut? So we get to like James Woods' bar, that I guess is like under construction, calling it the Palace. Basically like, yeah, it's going to be my new legit thing, you know, getting out of the gambling. And he's like, no, you're not. Whatever. I could offer you a job. You know, if you want, you could be a celebrity, you know, bartender here and or be security or whatever. And I'm like, you know, celebrity bartender is not that bad, Jeff.
Right?
Maybe that's the gig that ends up paying more and you don't have to do shady shit for James Woods. Just throwing that out there.
I mean,
even security, it's like, let's be real. It's going to be a cakewalk. But then instead he's like, all right, well, I got a real job for you. Here, find this chick. She stole $50,000 from me. And like, who is it? Oh, it's the owner of the LA Outlaw's daughter. I've been banging her for the past year or whatever, and she stole some money from me and can't seem to find her.
Oh, wait, and she's the one who stabbed me in the leg.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm like, ah, it's all coming together.
And she also owns the dog, we find out later.
It's true. Oh, it is her dog.
That's right.
Sam the dog, yeah. And then apparently James Woods has some dirt on Jeff Bridges, like some blackmail stuff that we never come to find out, or do
we?
We do.
Yeah, what was it?
It's that he told what's
her name? The point shaving thing. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that he threw the game, was going to throw the game. He did throw the game, I think.
We'll get to that when we get to that, because I had some questions about that too. Basically, Jeff Bridges is like, okay, cool. I'll take your money and I'll find this chick. And he's like all indignant stuff about it. I'm like, this isn't how you get one up on James Woods. This is just, you casually take the money and then, I don't know, disappear if you want. He goes to see the owner of the LA Outlaws, you know, the parents, basically, the mom and the stepdad. And he's basically like, hey, so remember running to your daughter a couple months ago? Any idea where she's at? Might be hanging out. And the owner's instantly like, Jake sent you, didn't he? I'm not buying this bullshit. You can't bullshit a bullshitter. I don't have a football team. And then she's basically like, you know, I'll pay you double if you can find her or just take care of Jake, keep him busy so that, you know, she can live her life. Or she says something like, watch over her for us or something like that. And I'm like, Jeff, consider the options, man. Like,
right.
But of course, he's all indignant, like, I'm not a spy, man. Kind of are. Like, that's the whole point of what you're doing.
And then he's like, actually, I'm just here to get, like, my old job back. You can't just fire me because I have a broken arm.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, a receiver.
I just want to play football, man.
I thought generic white guy stepdad football owner team could also have been played by Ted Knight. The casting call for this movie, right? We already had these all-stars. When can we bring him in for this? Ah, the budget. That's what it was.
Yeah, say maybe he was busy doing a Murder, She Wrote or something. I don't know, man. There's some party for, like, they're opening up some canyon preserve, or I don't know exactly what was going on here. It has a nice view of LA. That's all that matters. And so they're at this party where they're like fundraiser, and some environmentalists crash in. We get, oh, politics are involved. Of course they are. It's LA with rich whites. We get it. Blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Move on.
So this was some ivory tower stuff going on here, as we come to discover later. Like, there was a quote that I wrote at one point where they were saying, you know, we've come up here to leave the city behind us. You know, and they're building these mansions looking down on all the plebeians in the city, right? And I was like, what is this? I mean, this just reeks of Gordon Gekko all over the place. I was like, this is awful.
Look, as someone who lives high up on a mountain overlooking the poors, I understand. So what happens for me? Yeah. So yeah, there's like a whole thing where he like confronts his lawyer again, Saul Rubinek, and like tosses him into the band. He's like, oh, you screwed me, man. You screwed me, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, that's what lawyers do. So then he's off to Cozumel.
I visto esta mujer.
Yeah.
I visto esta mujer. Here we go again.
The best part about this little montage of him asking that question is there's one point where he's like, he looks at the picture of, you know, Rachel Ward, like, smiling at the camera, blah, blah, blah. And then looks at a woman who's, like, suntanning. Are you identifying this woman based on her back to that picture?
It was the dark, curly hair. He saw the dark, curly hair.
Yeah, dark, curly hair in Mexico. You're not going to find that anywhere. What was the show where there was, like, the app that you could, like, photo the back of anybody's head and it would tell you what the front of it looks like? Wasn't that, like, on 30 Rock?
I know the app that turns Dan into a woman. I've seen that one. That's pretty good.
Go on.
No, but to your point, I busted out laughing at this part because she's barking at him in Spanish. Again, this is another point in the movie where I'm entertained. I'm like, I wasn't expecting a twist, right? It's like M. Night Shyamalan. And then I'm like, wait, I got to translate what she's yelling. They let that go for a while. And I'm like, it just became too fast. And I was like, whatever. I mean, basically, you're like, you're a pervert. Get out of here. You know, blah, blah, blah. What are you doing? And I'm like, okay, well, you didn't need to overreact like that. I thought that was funny. It was a little bit of levity.
And then he peels off on a moped after that. And I'm like, wait, where's that thing from earlier? Ah, it doesn't matter. Maybe someone else is renting it now. A couple scenes where he's like getting a call from Jake and he's like, hello? Oh, yeah, I haven't found her yet. Well, I wasn't expecting to find her in the yellow pages or anything.
Okay, let me ask you a question about this.
Okay.
Who answers their phone sweaty with their shirt open, glistening? And then did you notice the background music?
No.
It was the acoustic version to Phil Collins's Against All Odds, right? The name of the title of the movie itself.
Take a look at me now.
Exactly. Whatever. It has two titles, right? But even my wife pointed out, she's like, you hear that? That's the Genesis song. And I'm like, it is. And then it dawned on me. I was like, oh, wait, I wonder. Oh, shoot.
It's hot. In Mexico, he has to have his shirt open.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it sounds like Eric's never been to Mexico. Like, right? He wakes up all sweaty with their shirt off, and
Steve every morning.
But
you play like romantic music, and he's talking to James Woods. Talk about just flatlining the scene.
Well, that's another thing with this movie, like the music score or whatever. Like, yeah, there's like the acoustic version of a Phil Collins song, which is very 80s. I get it.
Sorry, but fuck Phil Collins.
Babe, how do you really feel about Phil
Collins? I mean, he divorced his wife with a fax, something like that.
Have you not forgiven him for leaving Genesis or whatever? Or was that
No, I haven't forgiven him for all of Tarzan and all of Spirit, Stallion and Cimarron. And I was a nanny.
That was Bryan Adams.
I'm Courage or is Phil Collins?
He was Tarzan. I don't know about the other ones.
I don't forgive him for being owned by Disney during the time when I was, well, I was a nanny, because that's all I heard.
Mm. All right, well, oh, why are you telling me to fuck off? Because he's Australian, right? Or was that just...
He's English.
Or is he English? I don't know. Trying to remember the South Park episode he was on the accent they were doing, but...
It's funny you guys mentioned the Phil Collins, because when Eric sent out the suggestion to watch this movie, I went on to attempt to find it before I realized I already had it on my Plex. When I typed it in, the first thing that came up was the music video for the Phil Collins Against All Odds. And I was like, okay. So then I started looking into it a little bit, because I knew when he did the soundtrack for Tarzan and stuff like that. I was like, okay. I was like, because I thought that was something he did later in his career, but apparently he started doing music for movies earlier on.
Where have you guys been? Am I the only Genesis fan left on the planet?
Yes.
Eric, Genesis was huge when I was 2. The Sledgehammer video, I think I was 3, and Peter Gabriel had already left, so...
I wanna be
your sledgehammer. Oh, I almost forgot. He did actually find the girl randomly, like at a market or whatever. That's right. She pulled off on the moped after he was like trying to flirt with her or something, and she's like, whatever, dude, bye.
What? I love the quote when he tries to pick her up, just like casually, like trying to play Mr. Cool. And he's like, well, you know, there's not much to do around here. And she goes, get off the island. The ferry leaves every morning.
Is Cozumel an island?
No, Cozumel's a coastline.
Oh.
The writing in this is just top notch.
I did like, after this, Jeff gives a call to James Woods. And he was like, well, it's not like I'm just going to bump into her buying fruit or something.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah.
I see James Woods the other end, like, that's out of specific.
So at this point, we're actually 38 minutes into the movie at this point, because I made timestamps as I went along. And I had to stop again and do some research, because as she's talking, I turned to my wife and I said, where is she from? What accent is this? What affect is she trying to put on? So Rachel Wood is from Cornwall, England, and she's trying to play an American. And just her American accent is not great.
Well, she does sound rich.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, she kind of sounds like a Kennedy.
The next day, she mentioned something about like taking the ferry. So we see Jeff Bridges playing chess with a kid, just waiting for her to show up at the ferry. And then he misses it. And then I guess he charters a boat to take him to the ruins of Tulum, which is now a major cruise port. I've been there. It's fantastic. They never mentioned a Jeff Bridges movie being shot there. And I was kind of disappointed about that. But I was looking at those like, oh, yeah, I got pictures of all this. This is great.
Been there.
And of course, Tulum and Cozumel, beautiful, like light blue beaches with the water and the really white sand and just heaven on earth. So it's like, okay, cool. They definitely got their location scout. I hope you got a bonus for this one.
So next time you go, are you going to be the nerd standing there going, did you know that they filmed the Jeff Bridges movie here?
Only if the steam room is involved. More on that later.
And Jeff Bridges was there waiting for her to come catch the ferry. It actually wasn't chess he was playing with. It was checkers, and they were using beer caps.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's right.
Because I saw that and I was like, okay, I might have to start collecting some beer caps since I've lost a bunch of checks.
See the kid pop a couple Coronas or whatever, like, I got another pawn here. She's there like drawing or painting or whatever. Jeff Bridges walks up like, oh, so we run into each other again. Of course, she's like, all right, who sent you? Was it my parents or was it Jake? And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm just here trying to hit on a hot chick I saw once that just happens to be in Cozumel with me. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, he starts playing like hard to get. If this works, like, spoilers, it does. Because she just pops up in his hotel room later, knock at the door like she's housekeeping.
How is it that he's there for like, what, a week? Have you seen this mujer? Have you seen this mujer? In like, what, an hour she finds him?
Mm-hmm. She's a good detective.
Better than he was.
There's a couple other good detectives in this. The other thing too is he's broke as all get out. He's got the money from James Woods, right? He gave him 10 mm-hmm. grand and he said he would pay him another 20 when he got back. He's already been on the island for like a week.
He spent like $10, so
25 cents a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. He owns Cozumel now with 10 grand.
But the distance from LA to Cozumel in the 80s, got to remember, you know, it's not Southwest Airlines budget want to get away flight. It's 3,100 miles away.
Yeah.
I thought the other guy paid for that flight.
There's some money transacting here that doesn't add up.
$13 million budget, Eric.
I mean, what? You wanted to watch him on the plane for like X hours?
Yeah, yeah. He Eric wants to see him smoking on the airplane.
Nobody cared to see his plane trip.
Nobody cared to see him shirtless again either, but here we go.
I'm sorry. Some of us are going to beg to differ.
I mean, he had a six pack or an eight
pack. You know, on that note, I'm going to take my shirt off right now.
Wait, babe, be careful. We're out of gun butter.
Luckily, I got this Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I can just rub on my top body here.
Oh, my top.
So anyway, that and she invites them over to her studio or whatever, which, by the way, must be nice to have a studio directly on the beach where I think it's also a stop on the Carnival Cruise.
You mean the studio that no one knows where it is and you go down the road till you see the three beer cans dangling off a tree branch and then you make a right and you keep going?
Yeah, those directions are insane.
She gave him a distance. She said 19 kilometers out of town to find out of town.
To find a couple beer caps or whatever. Yeah. It's like, all right, then you take a ride at the tree with the yellow dog next to it, as is tradition.
In his VW thang. We get to see it finally.
Woo! All right, so Steve, you have to go and then you're to turn left at the cow. Not that cow, the other cow. But the cow is in the barn, so you just got to be careful there. But you can make a left when you see the cow. Not the first cow, the other cow. And then you're going to go until there's a tree. Now, there's a lot of trees, but you want that tree. It's the one.
My biggest thing with this studio, it's just like two walls and like a bunch of art shit up. And
it's lean-to.
Is there not monsoon season in Cozumel?
No,
like,
she's been there.
Or high tides, or I don't know.
But she's only been there for like whatever, right? Like,
you took issue with that?
Yes.
I took issue with the medieval undergarments that she was wearing. What was that? Was that a nightgown? Was that a smock?
What?
Did she just escape the mental hospital? Like, what was she wearing?
I'm sorry, it's called a caftan, and it's something that ladies of a certain age wear.
Yeah, she wanted to keep sand out of there.
Yeah.
I don't know that she wore undergarments much in this movie. When she shows up with that burlap sack.
It's called a caftan.
Burlap, sure.
It's sort of like a muumuu, but with less stitching.
It was terrible.
So then they start talking, and this is where the movie starts becoming super drama. She's talking about like, oh yeah, Jake was a fling. I was just basically banging him to get back at my parents. Also, my brother killed himself. I'm like, my God, I am getting so rock hard at this passion. I cannot concentrate. Blood is rushing elsewhere.
Babe, it's a sob story, so she's going to get a blowjob.
She was giving the sob story, so she's getting the blowjob?
Yeah, she's getting a blowjob. Okay. That's what I said. She's getting a blowjob.
That explains why Jeff Bridges is like, so I gotta go, you know, as a sane man would do. And she's like, but why? Why'd you fucking come here if we weren't gonna fuck? You know, basically. And I'm like, good point.
And then it just got super awkward.
Take it away, because my next note is kissing like horses eating an apple.
You just read my mind. Tanya's fallen out of her chair. It was so bad. I don't know. I expected it to be typical 80s, kind of sensual, just romantic scene.
Saxophone.
Some Kenny G. None of that. I mean, your analogy is 100% correct. These horses are out to pasture.
And then it's a montage of them like diving down into the ocean to, I don't know, look for pearls and drowned. And then just a lot of like licking and again, back to the horse kisses and then dancing and then having the world's worst wet t-shirt contest when they just kind of like leave the dance party to go take a dip in the water.
And random butt cheeks. I mean, it was everything.
Yeah, butt cheeks. Mm-hmm.
It was everything you didn't want in a sex scene. It was terrible. Oh my God. I saw more of Jeff Bridges' tongue than I think I ever need to see in my life. So gross.
And then when the montage is over, it's like, man, it's been a great 2 weeks. And I'm like, really? Okay, here we go.
That blew my mind. I literally said to myself, and I wrote it on my notepad. And I said, how long has he been there? That exact next note. It's like, it was a wonderful 2 weeks. I'm like, what?
And then this is where I guess Jeff Bridges just nutted. And so he has to like spill his deepest, darkest secret to this woman where he's like, so yeah, there was this time where like the point spread in the football game was 4 points and the ball was coming my way and I wanted to get a touchdown. But I was like running math in my head. So I like dropped the.
No, but he caught it.
It sounded like he like caught it and then like threw it out of bounds or something.
No, he caught it and he ran and he made it to the 5 yard line, he said. And then he got tackled and he fumbled the ball. It had just let it go. And then he was like, if somebody else on the team would have done that, you would be like finding me in jail or whatever he said. I don't even know.
By the end of the story, like he's like damn near crying and everything. I just wanted her to be like, that's the stupidest story I've heard in my life. Did I tell you my brother killed himself and I've been banging James Woods for the last year? And that's the best you've got. Okay.
And you know what she says instead? She goes, I wish I'd seen you play football.
Yeah. It was totally a, I wasn't paying attention, but you know what? I'm sure you're good at what you do.
This was the worst pillow talk in a movie ever.
Her mother owns a team. How does she never watch a single game?
I don't know. Do you watch the games your mom owns? I don't know.
What? So the equivalent of this is like, Eric, if you're like having that moment of post-nut clarity and you're talking about the time you and your uncle were like working on a car, but then the jack gave way and crushed your uncle under it, and your wife's response was something like, oh man, I would have been a great ride in that car along the coast.
Oh, I wish I could have ridden with you in the car.
Yeah, right? I mean, ew. The whole thing was just forced from beginning to end. It was awful. You know, we talked about in Corvette Summer how there was no chemistry between Mark Hamill and Annie Potts. This was 1,000 times worse. Like, they had zero on-screen chemistry.
She legit looks like she just has disdain for Jeff Bridges.
Right? Everyone.
I don't get.
Disdain for literally everyone in the world.
She has disdain for living.
I don't know, man.
She's skinny and pretty.
So?
So that's all you need.
Coke's big in the 80s. There's a lot of skinny girls.
Trust me. She's skinny and pretty. She gets everything she wants.
There was a lot of Coke in this movie, too. Did you notice that?
Coca-Cola?
Yeah, that kind.
Coca-Cola.
We'll get to it. Anyway.
For the Mark Hamill, Annie Potts thing, at least there, she was trying to be a lady of the road or, you know, prostitute. So that alone would, it's not like going to be intimate, although they did try to play it that way. But that is more believable than this movie.
Well, yeah, well, this is why you don't give hoes all the money. Because if they have all the money, then they become this person as opposed to Annie Potts. That's what we're talking about, right?
Well, we haven't even crescendoed yet on this thing, so let's just keep going.
Yeah. So, and then she also casually went like, oh, I'd love to watch you play. By the way, I didn't steal that money from Jake. And he's instantly like, wait, what? We should run off together. What?
No. She didn't. She said, my mom cut off the trust fund. I'm out of money. I have to go home. And he was like, what about the money from Jake? And then she was like, I never took any of the money from Jake. Why would I take money from him if I was trying to get out from under him? And then he was like, oh, well, I have money from Jake. Should we just run off together?
Yeah, he'll just forget about that shit. Cut to like 10 days later after he's like tried to throw Jake off his trail by, I assume, just racking up airline miles to Mexico City and other cities.
He knew somebody was on his trail. So he was, just flying around to like a million different cities. And she was really bored in a small town. So her life is the worst.
So this is when they're like the Mayan ruins there at Tulum or whatever, and they're like
Chichen Itza, right? That's where she wanted to go.
Oh yeah, Chichen Itza, that's right, that's the one with the pyramids and stuff.
Yeah, and she was like, ugh, everything here is absolutely the worst, absolutely fucking terrible, you'll see when you get here. And then she takes him to like absolutely stunning places.
Yeah, and they see the hieroglyphs about like the way Mayans used to play football, basically, where he's like, oh look, they even have like chin straps and stuff. And like, yeah, but if you lost, you got executed. And if you won, you sometimes got executed.
And if you bet on the game, you might have gotten executed.
Yeah. And if you call the referee a racial epithet, you were beheaded. And it's like, you know, maybe not too bad.
Hi-Li was a brutal sport. That's all I'm going to say, right?
Wait, was it Hi-Li? I thought that was the one with, I don't know, the big scoop hand things or whatever.
That was a Hi-Li court. I mean, that's what the Mayans played. That was their sport. And that's what she was talking about.
For some reason, I thought that was like Middle Eastern. But anyway,
No. And it was cool that they were making that parallel to modern football and rugby to Hi-Li, even though it shares some properties with like lacrosse and all that. But that was a fun, for me as a history nerd, I was like, this is cool. I've also seen this on Ancient Aliens, so we're all good now.
Look, just because white people didn't do it doesn't mean it's aliens.
Chupacabra, that's all I'm gonna say. But
look, I have solved the chupacabra. Just look up a sloth skeleton.
Well, speaking of looking up, what about that upskirt as she's coming down the pyramid? Who is the key grip on this scene in particular? I was like, what are we doing now?
Looking it up, looks like it was Beau Bridges. Interesting. Yeah, so also around this time, she's like, oh yeah, by the way, I did steal Jake's money. It's in Mexico City, by the way. And I'm like, run, Jeff, run fucking now. Go back to LA, become a celebrity bartender. You're a goddamn fool. And instead, he's like, you know I love you, right? But it does it in the creepiest, most alpha way possible, where he's like, I can never live without you. You're mine now. We can't be apart. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening with this movie? Tanya, please explain.
Twist.
Movie got a movie.
You remember earlier I made notes. What do you mean about Jake's money? And then the movie sort of answers it as I'm thinking about these questions. I literally wrote down and I put a star and I said, How is this an R-rated movie?
Eric, it's funny you should ask, because then...
Here we go.
Jeff Bridges, I think, says something like, hey, so I hear there's like a sweat house in this place. Not to them, bare-assed fucking in these ancient ruins in what is like an ancient Mayan spa.
Yeah. The first thing I thought of was like, that is not something you do unless you want to incur the wrath of like the Incans and the Mayans.
Yes.
The chupacabra.
Curse upon you.
You imagine the Montezuma's revenge he's going to get.
See, my thought was the fact that there were other tourists there.
Yes.
A place like I would be all quiet. So they'd be in there going to town. So the echoing would just amplify out.
It was completely empty. The whole place. It was like by itself. I was like, what kind of like temple is this where there's nobody else?
The cruise ship hasn't pulled up. Like it's a random Tuesday or something. Like, no, there's people there. There's park rangers there. Like some walking in like, hey, put your clothes on and get out of our sweat lodge.
Right?
Like, these are ancient ruins. You're going to get all of the diseases.
And then it became this weird montage of Incan carvings and body placement and crying.
Yeah.
I didn't know if they were playing Twister or searching for gold. What the hell was happening?
The ancient Mayan ruin equivalent of rug burn in your beehole. Mm-hmm. That's why she's crying.
Don't even mention the spiders, scorpions.
Oh yeah, spiders and snakes and shit.
There are snakes in her butt.
Ugh, bottle caps from past tourists.
Steve asked me if I wanted to fuck in an Incan ruin. By the way, with my mother watching the movie with us.
That's right.
And I said no, because I don't want snakes in any of our butts. And my mom agreed that neither of us have snakes in butts.
We've been talking about the budget of this film for quite a bit now, and I understand where it all went in this scene. How much Johnson & Johnson baby oil did they use? Like, I've never seen people so shiny in my life.
So you've never seen a Fast and Furious movie?
Yes, hey. Eric's never been to Mexico during the summer.
No, but you can buy gun butter by the barrel.
Yeah.
It was just, wow. They were bronze. I mean, they might as well have been statues. It was just unreal.
No, there were statues there, Eric, and they weren't covered in gun butter, except the ones they were fucking on, I guess.
You know, they were more convincing than these two were in terms of their chemistry. Again, it was even more awkward than the previous love scenes. Oh, the body placements alone. I was like, is this a Pilates class? Like, what are you guys doing?
This is to show off their youthful, flexible, taunt bodies.
Dubile.
Jeff Bridges look good. I'm not gonna say
in the midst of all this, then the coach,
oh my god,
yeah, the assistant coach Sully shows up randomly. I'm like, hello, welcome back.
You're in a public touristy place and you're amazed someone pops their head in hearing y'all boning.
You're like, Sully, what are you doing here? I'm on a cruise.
Right?
What the fuck are you doing here banging in the ancient ruins of Chichen Itza?
Well, the best part is he's like, well, you weren't hard to find. I'm like, this is the 80s, man. How are you tracking this guy? By what magic? Are you a time traveler?
By phone calls from Cozumel. It's not that hard. And then he's like, yeah, Jake sent me, and then pulls a gun out and he's like, whoa, 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 wait.
Hold it.
Let's talk about this. Like, what does he have on you? Like, enough. And that's all it takes. And then there's a fight. Ah, bah, 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 this fight. And there's a ledge. Oh no, Jeff Bridges is going to get thrown over the ledge. And we're only an hour into this movie.
62 minutes at this point.
And then Sully like kind of tosses him to the side and Jeff Bridges like hits his head or whatever. And then the coach starts like, hey, Terry, you okay? I'm like, wait, did he have a change of heart or something? Like, hey, it's okay. I'm sorry, man. Look, let's get you to hospital. You're going to be just fine. But then Jessica, that's right. That's her name in this movie. She grabs the gun that's like on the floor and he's like, bitch, stop. Get help. Give me that gun. Pow. Roll credits, guys. What do we think? No, there's more.
Yeah, we're at the halfway point of this travesty. Another quote, I wrote it down because, you know, he's there consoling Sully and Sully, it's going to be okay. Maybe I'll stop the bleeding as he just tries to compress the bullet hole that's right at his heart. I'm like, really? Okay.
He said maybe. Jessica's like, yeah, I don't need this shit and fucking runs. And Jeff Bridges is like, well, where are you going? I thought we were going to like love this okay. So then he ends up carrying Sully's corpse through the ruins of Chichen Itza to another stop on the tour.
And nobody noticed. Nobody noticed the guy carrying another guy.
Well, there was nobody around, so of course they didn't.
I don't care if it's monsoon season. Someone saw them.
You guys didn't see the kids playing in the Hialeah field.
The whole beginning of the movie, just to go back, where he's like, have you seen this woman? Do you think any of them are going to say anything? After the first person he asked, I was like, none of these MFers are going to say they've seen this woman. Gringo, get the hell out. Yeah.
Get out of here, gringo. Emigra, emigra.
Terrible.
Dumps his body into one of those, what are they called? The cenotes or whatever.
A lagoon.
Cenotes.
Yeah.
And yeah, just another beautiful spot on the tour. Like, yep, yeah, he's tied to a rock. He'll be fine. They'll never find him. Oh yeah, she went back to his hotel room, stole all of his money, and flew off. You would think that would be roll credits, right?
No.
We cut to him being back in LA, like, what did we find out? It was like 2 months later or some shit like that. Basically, he walks up to James Woods and like, hey, I quit. I'm not looking for her anymore. James Woods is like, what the fuck are you talking about? You think I don't know what's going on? Like, basically, this implies, like, I know what's going on, you know, blah, blah, blah. But hey, I got another job for you so you can play football again. I still got the hooks. We're still friends, whatever. He's like, no, man, we're not friends, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Jessica, what the fuck are you doing here? I've been looking for you for months. And she's like, I've been here.
Unreal.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah, we're going to miss Sully. Hey, you want to watch a game? The whole rest of this movie, I'm like, just leave, dude.
We go to Jake's palace. It's open now. It's complete.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's like, yeah, come on by the club tonight. You know, whatever. I'll put you on the list. And so, yeah, that night he shows up and he's still like talking to James Woods like, I don't work for you. I just came here for the free booze or something.
And he says, I got to get your stink off of me. I was like, yeah, that's a good quote. I like that. It's a good one.
Yeah. So why'd you come to his place?
Exactly.
And then he sits down next to a girl and I'm like, is that Christy Swanson or Elizabeth Shue? Like, Steve's interested in this girl. So I looked it up. Her name is Tamara Stafford. She starred in 3 movies. This, The Hills Have Eyes 2, and Riptide. And then called it a career, I guess.
She's literally credited as Kirsch's girlfriend.
Yeah, Saul Rubinek's girlfriend or whatever in this movie. Yeah.
And the way they did her hair, I thought at first it was Edie and they had redone her hair, kind of lightened her up because they have almost a similar face. And then yeah. I realized it was a different girl. And I'm like, okay, well, never mind. That kind of breaks the illusion.
We talked about it before, the music God. In this movie. Oh, we get an incredible music performance from Sir Phil Kid Creole and the Coconut.
So I had to stop because I was like, wait a second. I was like, is this kind of like interesting, this like first part of it? And I was like, is this real? So Kid Creole and the Coconuts are in fact a very real group.
Oh yeah.
Except the Coconuts apparently have been rotating since those first 3 that are in the movie were the original 3 Coconuts. They left at some point when I guess the first album was not a big success, so go figure. And then he's had a rotating cast of Coconuts since then.
You got to keep them fresh.
You do.
I don't even know where to start with this. Izzy, do you want to talk about their unshaven armpits, or do we want to talk about the fact that he looks like DeBarge had a baby with Big Bad Voodoo Daddy?
I was thinking serious Lou Bega vibes.
Yeah, I mean, look, people can shave whether they want or not. I'm not here to judge. It's a stylistic choice.
As a dancer?
Yeah.
All 3 of them? Is that a uniform requirement to not shave your pits?
No, maybe they're like pit merkins or something.
Hey, think about it. Coconuts are hairy.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
That's how you know the coconut is ripe, if you know what I'm saying.
Here's the thing. At least you know they're of age.
Exactly.
You know they're old enough to grow hair.
You don't want no bald green coconut or whatever the hell.
I just broke him again.
And Eric's gone. All right. So then...
We broke him.
This might have been better than the baseball bat with the forehead running around in a circle.
That's right.
Oh wow.
So I didn't notice that the first time watching it. Just for the purpose of viewing this time, I had it playing in the background muted while we were going over this.
See, this is what he does. It's like trading paint.
No. Like, I did it so I could see the things, like we said, they had armpit hair. I didn't notice that when I watched it, but then when you said it, I looked up at the screen, I'm like, holy crap, they did.
Yeah, they like shimmer in the light too. Yeah. Like, it's like bleached.
They're
like
tentacles.
They like zoomed in on them. How'd you miss it?
Zoom and enhance.
Later in the scene, it looked like they were clean shaven.
So speaking of getting arrested for harvesting underage things, James Woods has a job offer for Jeff Bridges. He's basically like, hey, so Sully, he came to me because him and Kirsch or whatever were trying to sell me out on some betting shit and fixing games and blah, blah, blah. And basically, I need you to go get some files on Kirsch because he has dirt on like everybody. But if you get these files, then we're squared. You'll never have to talk to me again. You get your stink off or whatever the hell you keep saying. You get still showing up at my club. Okay, cool. I can do that.
He confronts Kirsch in the bathroom.
In the bathroom. Yes.
Yeah.
And I've just said, oh, the 80s, because he's doing coke.
Fuck yeah.
Man, this is like the third time this has happened in this movie, too. I mean, it's like, what a trope. I'm like, okay, fine. But then there's that awful scene that kind of comes next between Jeff Bridges and Rachel Ward, where they it's that awkward sexual tension that borderlines on sexual assault.
Borderlines, you say?
It was cringy as shit.
Oh no, he 100% sexually assaults her. But it turns out she's into the rough trade, so
yeah.
Rip my effing shirt off! Rip my shirt off! I'm like, what?
He's going full like Mel Gibson in a South Park episode, like, oh, twist my nipples! Oh, you'll never torture as he's like putting himself in a fucking Iron Maiden. Oh. Yeah, he's like tearing his shirt off and she's like screaming like for the cops, like Jake. And then like they start crying.
The writing at this point, I'm like, did they lose the plot entirely? Like, what is the point of this?
What?
The next morning, James Woods and Jessica, they're chatting on the beach and she's like, look, I'm not gonna live. He's like, look, you're not gonna get away from me. I'm gonna live here forever. You know, whatever creepy bullshit.
Yeah, and James Woods says, you ruined my life and I'm not going to lose you. And I'm like, what? Yeah. Again, the writing, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Is he on cocaine too? Probably. Because none of this jives at all. There's some really weird transitions at this point in the movie. Once we kind of hit that Jake's palace to the next part of this, when we're in the building and now it's turned into sneakers.
Yeah. So it's Sunday night
at Nakatomi Tower.
Jeff Bridges has the keys to Steve's office. First off, he starts off by running flaps, of course, because, you know, you want to get good and sweaty before you're about to do a B&E. So he goes to Kirsch's office and he's like looking through, breaks into the little thing, finds a bunch of files, but pulls out one that says, fuck you, Terry.
That was so funny.
And I'm like, just leave. Wipe everything down that you've touched. Just fucking leave. Nope. Instead, he's like, I gotta go take a shit or something. Goes into the bathroom, catches Kirsch in the shower. Dead, dead, dead. I was hoping to see a little Saul Rubinak taking a shower. Like, oh, what are you doing here? Slip, hit his head, you know, awkward Benny Hill kind of death or something, right? Mm-hmm. Nope, no, he's just dead. Johnny on the spot security guard pops up and he's like, surprise, motherfucker. Guess what? I owe James Woods some money too. Jeff Bridges like shuts the doors and like gets the gun from him and I guess knocks him out, but doesn't kill him. He's just never heard from again, even when Jeff Bridges apparently hides Kirsch's body. So they transition from that scene where like knocked out the security guard and he's like trying to move Kirsch's body to him pulling up at the Ginger Man or whatever in the car. And I'm like, are those bodies in the trunk of that Porsche? This is going to get really fun really quick. Right?
The frunk of a 911 was designed to take a full set of golf clubs. So if you fold a human the right way, it should fit in the front.
Two humans, Eric. A Saul Rubinek and a security guard.
He'll just carry him on his shoulders because nobody will notice in this movie.
Yeah, so. He'll notice him walking through the Ginger Man and hitting on Edie or whatever. Yeah.
Why does he pick up a dead body he hadn't touched? Because then he could have just ran.
Movie got a movie. As soon as you see the piece of paper that says, fuck you, Terry, you start dusting shit off and you fucking leave.
He was wearing gloves. So he was wearing gloves.
If you're okay, cool. Then you're done. You know what you do? Go to the Ginger Man, establish your alibi with Edie, fuck her brains out. And then guess what? You wake up the next morning, you're not a suspect. And maybe Edie's pretty sweet. I don't know.
To your point, Steve, this is like the 100th time in this movie where it's like, Jeff, are you listening? Earth to Jeff, leave. Go do something else. Like, stop. Nope. He just keeps sending it scene after scene.
Jeff, you're acting like a Baldwin right now. I need you to act like a Bridges. Okay. I need you to just be cool, dude. You don't need to use live ammo. So he goes to see Edie, who's Kirsch's secretary. Okay, cool. He's going to like establish an alibi and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, I've seen Murder, She Wrote. I know how this stuff happens. Nope. Instead, he's like, okay, so I got some bodies in the trunk. Kirsch is dead. I need you to break into his office and find these files. Otherwise, I'm going to be in super duper trouble. And she's so drunk at this point. She's like, wait, what? Kirsch is dead? What are you saying? I got to get some coffee or something. Like, no time. I need you to tell me where his secret stash is.
The treasure chest, she called it. I was like, what is happening now? We've got a treasure chest. We're on a hunt. Ooh.
And then Jeff Bridges is totally like gaslighting her, like, oh, you know what? They'll kill you too. Once this all breaks, they'll kill you too. And I'm like, no, they won't. They don't give a fuck about the secretary.
Nope.
Okay, so
we go back to Nakatomi Tower.
They go back to the office because Edie's got to go in and like get the stash and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And this is where we're introduced to star of the movie, Ted White, as security guard with dog. And he's just the coolest motherfucker around. Like, I don't know what it is about this guy. Like, he'd be cool to have a beer with. I assume because he's a stuntman.
So the Doberman's sitting there over Edie's shoulder, just like, and she's like, your dog bothers me. And I love how he delivers it just so deadpan. He's like, he's supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, this motherfucker gets it.
Right?
You know, she's like, no, Jake told me to get here and get this stuff before the cops start showing up.
But in order to get into the safe, like, she turns the radio on, like, hits, like, different things, and then turns the dial, and then it pops open a little door on the side.
That was some James Bond shit right there. That was right. Cool.
Ring, ring, ring. Who is it? Security guy picks up. Oh, hey, Jake. Yeah, yeah, we're almost done. The girl's here getting all the stuff you wanted. You know, the papers that blah, blah, blah. And she like pulls the phone cord out of the wall or whatever and starts running. He's like, hey, get your ass back here. And then Jeff Bridges comes out of left field and like starts fighting them. And
but he enters like Hans Gruber, slick back hair and the leather jacket and everything. I'm like, oh man, here we go.
They tussle a bit and then Edie ends up taking like a letter opener.
Tussle. He punt kicks him in the balls. Field goal right between the legs.
People tussle differently.
Right?
But yeah, Edie grabs this letter opener and stabs a security guard's hand like into the door of the bathroom. And he's like, ah, fuck, fuck, fuck. They run with the secret stash of papers. Jessica goes to talk to her mom.
Yes, and enter another car into the equation. One of Tanya's favorites. Did you see it?
No.
You know what? I'm drawing a blank.
It was a gold SL convertible Mercedes.
Oh.
Like Rick drove a Magnum.
Maybe I wasn't watching that part.
That, again, this is me picking out cars.
I may have fallen asleep while my meal was being served to me.
I mean, generic white guy number one drives a Jag and Tommy drives a C4 Corvette. So I made a list of all the cars.
As is tradition, as it should be for your podcast. Yeah, Jessica goes to see her mom and her mom's like, well, it's good to see you're in good health. And Jessica's instantly like, let me talk to my stepdad. And I'm like, why didn't you just ask for him? Have one of the guys handing out drinks or whatever, like, hey, can you go tap Ben on the shoulder and tell him his stepdaughter is outside here? But anyway, we had the Ben, the stepdad, and she's basically like, look, Jake is doing some seedy shit, you know, blah, blah, blah. You're like, he's got all this stuff. He's making people do horrible stuff. He's going to blow up everything.
This is where it sort of turns into Get Shorty, because they're like, Jeff Terry, whatever his name is, Jeff Bridges, he's got the goods, man. We got to get him because he's got the treasure chest. Okay. And I was hoping for another car chase scene at this point.
Of course.
Break it up a little bit, but no.
Now instead, we get Ben going to see Jake at his place, and he got all the goods on everybody. And, you know, we got to get this taken care of. Jessica has basically told him everything and basically screwed Jake over. And Jake's like, look, you dumbass, I work for him. I work for your stepdad. He's the one running shit and gets like 75% of the take on everything. You basically killed me. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what she wanted to do. But she's like, what? No, I was just trying to get some help. And I'm like, she might be smart or she might just be naive. I don't know. At this point, I'm like, whatever. I don't care for her.
No.
That's when Jeff Bridges calls up Ben. He's basically like, look, I got all this stuff. I don't want to fuck up your spot. I just want you to take care of Jake because I hate that fucker. And Ben's like, yeah, we could totally do that. Like, where do you want to do this exchange? How about the top of Wyler Canyon or what, you know, the scene from earlier? Like, sure. Why not? So then we go to Wyler Canyon, high atop the Mulholland View shelf overlooking LA or whatever. Jake ends up grabbing a gun from Tommy because Tommy's there too. Because Tommy's like Ben's right-hand man or Jake's right-hand man or was Jake's, but now Ben's because Ben's going to kill Jake, whatever.
Yeah.
Not only that, it becomes a super awkward Mexican standoff where Jeff Bridges isn't even in the scene and he's talking to them from behind the trees. And there's that terrible, annoying electric guitar the whole time. And yes. I was like, what? Ugh. It was a very bad cinematic. The optics of the whole thing, I was like, why did you guys choose to do it this way? And it wasn't even that like classic mobster scene where you've got an old Lincoln with some shoddy headlights and somebody standing in the fog and it's the meeting of the mobsters and you know somebody's going to get shot. No, it's Jeff Bridges sitting in a director's chair with a bullhorn off to the side. I was like, what is this?
So we see him like running around and Tommy goes to get him, but then I don't know, he sneaks up on Tommy and gets the gun from him. Jake's like, fuck this. Grabs Jessica, puts the gun to her head and is like, you can play this game, fucker. Just give me the stuff. And of course, Chef Bridge is like, no, you know, try me. And James Woods like, fuck you. I got nothing to lose. Push me. I dare you. I double dare you. And then Jessica, because she's Jessica in this movie, is like, no, don't do it. I love him. I'm like, you're not helping. You're not helping anyone right now. Pop, 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 pop. Jessica ended up shooting Jake in the little tussle.
That's two she shot in this movie.
Yep. But of course, Ben's like, yeah, don't worry, it's my stepdaughter. I'll take care of it. Goodbye, Jeff Bridges.
I literally wrote down, old white guy's going to do what old white guy's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to clean up the mess. He's got people on speed dial. He's going to take care of business. Like, don't worry about it, guys.
All right, I'm going to call up Kirsch in the morning. We'll get this all cleared up. Like, actually, hold on just a sec. Maybe you didn't get the memo.
Ew.
Like, it's not quite Monday morning. You're going to find out real quick.
Plot hole.
When she shot James Woods, then she, like, goes to like console him laying there on the ground. It's like, what the hell is this about?
This bitch is evil. That's what this is about.
She is mental. Yeah.
Against all odds, she's still alive. That's the way I look at this movie. So then we cut to 6 months later, where they're opening up the canyon, whatever that means. Building houses up there? Like, what are they doing?
And this is where the quote from Mrs. Wyler comes in that I mentioned before. She says, it is sanctuary from the crime and crowding from the city below.
Mm-hmm.
Those are her exact words. And I'm like, well, ain't that just a turn of events, right?
She says it in the blood puddle still left by James Woods from 6 months ago.
She's basically standing, yeah, where he was shot. Yeah. And I was like, wow, okay.
You know, Jeff Bridges is there and Ben's like talking to him. He's like, I'm going to go talk to this fucker. I'm like, yeah, I heard you got some tryouts for some other teams. Yeah, I'm going to be playing for the Dolphins next year. And like,
laces out.
And he's like, yeah, I figure I got a couple more years and I'll quit on my own terms. Cool. Well, you're out of Jessica's life. And he's like, I don't know, man, you can't protect her forever. Cue the Phil Collins music and then roll credits for like 5 minutes of her
just sobbing.
Yeah. Jessica just staring at the camera and sobbing and take a look at me now.
I was getting awkward. How long are they going to let this roll on?
I felt like she was peering into my soul after a while. Like, it was creepy.
Finally hits freeze frame after like 3 minutes. I'm like, that's because immediately after she's like, do we have the take or not? Like, the cut, you know.
This reminded me of a less good version of the end of Runaway.
Yeah, Runaway, where Tom Selleck and the girl are kissing for like 7 full minutes of credits with like fireworks going off in the background.
It's a welding. They have the welding sparks behind them.
But yeah, guys, that's against all odds. How many Academy Awards do you think it won?
None.
-3.
Spoiler.
They took Jeff Bridges' Academy Award away 30 years later. I'm sorry. We still remember. Never forget the Porsche 911.
Exactly. Beautiful car.
So would any of us recommend watching this movie?
No. Unless you're Jeff Bridges' completionist. I mean, in which case, you've already seen it.
I like the shots in Tulum. Except for the, you know, the fucking in the ancient ruins. But, you know, that was...
Oh, you mean especially the fucking in the ancient ruins.
I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah, just Google that shit.
Just look up the car chase. The car chase is legit. Cool too.
Yeah, yeah.
This isn't even, like, the best of James Woods. If he was allowed to go wild on this, it would have given it an extra star.
You were saying earlier, Izzy, how he's, like, a creep. There were certain parts where it really came out. But, like you're saying, he didn't go full-fledged with it, where I think it would have made his character much more sinister. But there were certain parts where, like, little things he said... And like, look, it was like he come across as a major creep.
Would I recommend this? What is the other alternative?
Not recommending this movie. I don't know. Or recommending a better movie of similar bullshit.
I mean, is it like this or The Stuntman?
Oh, fuck yeah. Stuntman's a great movie.
Yeah. Because then I recommend this one.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Wow, really? Compared to The Stuntman?
Yes. I was waiting for this landmine to be tripped because the last time we got together, we talked about The Stuntman. And then we got this movie. I was so.
That's right. You were all wrong and hated it.
I know. And Izzy corrected me and it was all good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually really liked this movie and I would watch it again because I think I missed some things now knowing what I know about it. And there's a special extra when we get to the what did we learn, which I'll come full circle on this as to why I really enjoyed this movie and why I think I need to watch it again.
That's what we call a tease, everybody. But hey.
Basically what I heard Eric say is this is his trading paint.
Yeah.
Oh.
I will watch it one more time, not 9 more times like you did.
Anybody interested in some fun facts about this movie?
Yes, please.
Oh, I don't know, Steve. Are they fun facts, super fun facts, because of fun facts?
Rotten Tomatoes, what do you think the critics thought of this movie? Like, what percentage of them thought this was a good movie and recommend it?
12%.
42.
I was thinking like maybe like 22, 23.
Do the critics think of this movie?
They absolutely do. This was a big release in 84.
All right. I am going to go with my super generous 17%.
Ladies and gentlemen, Against All Odds is rated fresh at 64% with the critics.
Oh.
Eric, you win.
I am the wrong
one. But unfortunately, nobody gives a fuck about the critics.
Fuck those critics.
What about the audience score?
I'm thinking it's probably pretty high too. Probably in the 60s as well.
You're crazy.
So here's the problem. How many women watch this?
Yeah.
At least half.
Half of all women or half of all votes for women?
At least not half of all
or
votes
for
women.
Or just half of all women. I go with.
That's some solid science right there.
73%.
I'm going to say like 38.
I'm going to go with the funniest answer, 69.
Nice. Dan, you win 45% with the audience, which makes sense to me.
Yeah, that feels more correct.
Because 90% of chicks, am I right? I mentioned earlier the budget, $13 million. Worldwide gross, 21.7. I think the Phil Collins song made more money.
That's a moneymaker. That's good.
With advertising, that I'd say that's a wash. Maybe.
It's a wash, yeah.
I mean, they got $4 for me out of Voodoo, so I mean, to watch this thing.
This movie is a remake.
Yes, thank you.
What? Yep,
of 1947's Out of the Past, a notable film noir starring Robert Mitchum, Kirk Douglas, and Jane Greer. Anybody notice her name in the credits when it started?
She's Mrs. Weiler.
Yep, she's the mom.
Oh!
But she was the daughter in the original, made a scant 37 years before.
That was my super fun little teaser there. I loved finding out that this was a remake because it proves that even 40 years ago, remakes sucked. But it also allowed me to go back and start watching the original movie, which is available for free on HBO Max or Max or whatever they're calling it now. I can see where they pulled some threads because a post-war movie from the 40s isn't going to have the same sort of cliches and these tropes that we're used to in the 80s.
Wait, Kirk Douglas wasn't raw dogging Jane Greer in the ancient ruins of, I'm just going to say, Anasazi tribal site or something?
No.
Is it fixing with a Tucker?
Yeah, and a Tucker. Yeah, exactly. But no, there are those threads of the stolen money and the runaway girl and all these kinds of things. And so I haven't completely finished watching it yet, which again gives me incentive to watch the original and then go rewatch the remake with now a more discerning eye to see how close they did an approximation or as a reboot of the original. So that gives me that motivation to watch it at least one more time just to draw those parallels.
Or to come to the conclusion that it actually sucks more than you initially think, right?
No, but we are due for a third reboot. So let's guess what they'll call the next one.
Oh, it'll be Against All Odds. I mean, it will star Nicholas Holt in the Jeff Bridges role. God, who's our new James Woods?
Oh,
Armie Hammer. Fucking Armie Hammer,
Armie
dude.
Hammer.
Kevin Spacey is the stepdad.
And Nicolas Cage is going to try to find his way into this movie.
Oh, shit. Nicolas Cage is Jake.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Either that or he's Sully. They're fucking on top of the Terracotta Warriors in Xi'an in the People's Republic of China. And then Nicolas Cage pops up and is like, Luchador!
And you remember, there's the like oldest human burial mounds in the all of North America are used for like tailgate parties for some college.
Oh, shit.
But the most important part in our recasting of this film of the same name for the third time, can we get Kid Creole and the unshaven coconuts back on stage for a reprisal?
Yeah, played by Lou Bega.
Mambo number five.
Some unshaven French chicks.
It doesn't have to be played by anyone. He's still alive.
What?
Yes.
But he's no longer a kid, so he's like Granddaddy Creole or something like that, right?
August Darnell, he's still alive.
Here you go, babe. If you want to keep your movie all in the U.S., in Louisiana, the Native American mounds, aka known as the Indian mounds, date back to 11,000 years ago.
Oh, wow.
They're the oldest man-made structure on the North American continent. They also happen to be just outside of LSU's.
That sounds like an LSU thing for tailgate parties.
LSU stadium, and they are collapsing under the weight of the tailgate parties. There seems to be no plan in place to save them. There were 8,000 mounds, but they destroyed most of them to build the LSU campus.
Wow.
Go Tigers. And that's, of course, go G-E-A-U-X Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The last little fun one I definitely want to get out there is the movie was, of course, shot in Mexico, right? It was while Rachel Ward was on her honeymoon. Think about that for a second, because she had fantastic chemistry with her co-star Jeff Bridges, where that wasn't on film, and they had pretty torrid sex scenes. Quote, It was a particularly bizarre shoot for us. Luckily, her husband, Brian Brown, is also a wonderful actor and was very understanding, Jeff Bridges says. So, guys, what did we learn from Against All Odds?
What did we learn, guys?
I'm not getting that time of my life back.
I learned that Samoyeds hate beach volleyball.
That's true.
I learned Mayan football rules are really different from American football.
Oh, I don't know what I learned from this.
Didn't you have a big revelation you were teasing earlier?
Oh, yeah. It was a remake. That was what I had learned. That was my big thing.
That was your big revelation? That it was okay.
I thought I was holding that card to myself, like, oh, I did all this research. Damn.
He worked so hard for that, babe. Sorry, and you just blew it. Just blew it.
Well, I guess I learned where the Ginger Man is officially, and it's not in LA. How about that?
Well, guys, thanks for watching this movie with us. I mean, I'm sorry you guys didn't enjoy it as much as we did just by how insane it was.
Oh, I didn't hate it. I mean, there's far worse things in that movie. There's a lot better things, too.
Right.
I enjoyed it. I love getting together with you guys to review movies. I don't know what we're going to do next time. This was a good nobody seen it movie, so we can come at it fresh, completely unbiased, and had some actors that we like in it that we knew, so that made it more fun, and all the factoids that go along with it. But for those of you that are listening to this maybe the first time and never have heard of Everything I Learned from Movies, Steve and Izzy, tell everybody where they can learn about your show.
Oh, well, of course, you can find us on all the major podcatchers under Everything I Learned from Movies. We watch bad to questionable movies and just basically explain like what we learned from them, because
movies have lessons.
Yeah, there's lessons to be learned, and we also just love movies, so it's like, even if it's like some parts are cool and the rest of it's crap, we can kind of help with that.
Oh, guys, we love movies.
And we also talk about beer, because we also like beer and are BJCP certified beer judges.
Yeah. How can you reach us, Steve?
Well, you can hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, and Patreon at EILF Movies. That's Everything I Learned from Movies. But babe, can we find you on social media at all?
Nope, I can't be found.
Liar!
Oh, wait, you can find me everywhere at Untidy Venus. That's a goddess who's bad at housekeeping. You can find a bunch of my cool art, all kinds of stuff. I'm everywhere at Untidy Venus.
Where can we find you guys?
Man, I wish I had a catchy jingle like you guys.
You guys gotta learn to sing as a little...
during Motorsports Break Fix!
Hey, that's good. I'm gonna use that. But for those of you listening to us on EILFM for the first time, although we've gotten together many times over the last couple of years, we are available everywhere in the planet where good podcasts and rubbish ones like ours exist as well, at Grand Touring Motorsports, or search Break Fix Podcast. Our mission is to shed light on something we call the autosphere. Part of our major goal is to capture the living history of different people and expose that to some younger petrol heads out there that they want to learn how to become that person, or how to get that job, or how to do that thing. So we're always interested in car adjacent stories, or even talking about movies like this with a great car chase scene in it, and picking out and doing a little bit of car spotting, but having a lot of fun along the way. So it's not your, you know, typical, you know, we're going to review the race show or talk about history on this date and in this place and this time. It's really a lot of fun, and we love crossing over with Steve and Izzy. So thanks for having us again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, if you're listening to this on Grand Touring Motorsports, like, come hit us up, and thank you all so much for putting up with our shenanigans.
And when we talk about that Jackie Chan racing movie, Thunderbolt or whatever, we keep teasing it.
Send it.
How can I just let you walk away? Just let you leave without a trace? When I stand here taking every breath with you, ooh, you're the only one who really knew me at all. How can you just walk away from me when all I can do is watch you leave? 'Cause we've shared the laughter and the pain.
If you like what you've heard and want to learn more about GTM, be sure to check us out on www.gtmotorsports.org. You can also find us on Instagram at Grand Touring Motorsports. Also, if you want to get involved or have suggestions for future shows, you can call or text us at 202-630-1770 or send us an email at crewchief@gtmotorsports.org. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, everybody. Crew Chief Eric here. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Break Fix, and we wanted to remind you that GTM remains a no annual fees organization, and our goal is to continue to bring you quality episodes like this one at no charge. As a loyal listener, please consider subscribing to our Patreon for bonus and behind-the-scenes content, extra goodies, and GTM swag. For as little as $2.50 a month, you can keep our developers, writers, editors, casters, and other volunteers fed on their strict diet of Fig Newtons, gummy bears, and Monster. Consider signing up for Patreon today at www.patreon.com/GT Motorsports. And remember, without fans, supporters, and members like you, none of this would be possible.